Hello and welcome to a podcast where we take fictional science from comics, movies, TV, etc. and try to make it factually, scientifically, possibly real. I'm Stoby.
I am known as Forgan.
And I'm Stu.
And this is The Science of Fiction.
Pick up the tricorder, put it on your head. Scanning the planet, see if anyone is dead. Autonomous car driving in Zanzibar. Beam me up, Scotty, I'm not that far. Android hoovering, tearing up the place. Flip phones and conference calls, friends in outer space. Astrophysicist sitting on my knee. Asking aliens if they like a cup of tea.
Fiction, to the science of fiction. I've got an addiction to the science of fiction. I've got an addiction, baby, to the science of fiction. I've got an addiction to the science of fiction.
Okay, welcome to this week's Science of Fiction. This is episode 4. And in the room with me tonight is Stoby, and we have Stu back.
Hooray!
Hooray!
Hooray! I'm alive, mostly. Apart from the bits that aren't.
How are you getting on, Stu?
I'm okay. Unfortunately, my little mini kaiju, who is less of a mini kaiju and more of a sort of slowly growing micro kaiju, has been coming into his powers and making life a little bit difficult. But I'm back. I'm looking forward to being here and awake. The joy of being a parent, as both of you can attest.
Oh yes. Oh yes.
I don't think yours are quite as kaiju-like as mine.
Not at the minute. She has her moments, but she's been quite good for us just now, for the time being.
Emily definitely has the rage, but she's not at kaiju-level rage.
No. He leaves a trail of destruction in his wake, akin to nothing you've ever seen before. It's a sight to see. How are you guys? I have missed you guys.
It was good. We missed you last time, Stu. It was a really good discussion with Chen. It was really nice of him to come back.
I look forward to listening to it.
Yeah.
I don't look forward to editing it, but that's just me.
No. Right, well, this week's discussion is at Chen's request, actually. Chen requested it last time. And this week's discussion is parallel universes.
Parallel universes.
Yeah, so
one of my favourite topics in sci-fi, other than time travel.
Right, so what are we going to talk about?
Well, I mean, there's lots of different kind of, I've read up lots of different theories about parallel universes and the possibilities and the existence and things like that. So, I mean, the main sort of theory, I'm just going to jump right in, the sort of common theory for multiple things that happen in life, such as deja vu, ghost sightings, even dreams for some people, is the idea that there are multiple universes currently coexisting with us in the same room or place, but at different frequencies. Now, Forgan's trying not to laugh here, so obviously he's like, you've been reading Pop Science 101.
My bollocks-o-meter is off the chart.
Awesome. This is what I want you here for. So what they're saying is that these events happen when we vibrate in unison with the other universes. But my question is, how could it be possible to exist in the same space as another universe and just not be aware of its existence or have solid proof of its existence?
Okay, so a lot of the stuff you said there was crap.
Cool. Right. I'm happy with that.
this idea that you can somehow become united with a different universe through frequencies, I don't know what that means. It's all pseudoscientific. What is true is that there are some theories of physics that demand there to be more than one universe, and that in some sense those universes are coexisting, occupying essentially the same space and the same time, but they are separated and they can't interact. So that's one possible description of a like a multiverse, right? So that's a collection of universes together. And that idea comes from quantum mechanics, and it comes from something called the many worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics. Quantum mechanics is weird in that the maths that underpins the theory describes our universe really well, but it doesn't tell us what the nature of our universe actually is. So we have to make an interpretation as to what the maths actually means. And one of these interpretations is the many worlds interpretation. And the idea is basically that anytime a particle does almost anything where there is more than one thing that particle could have done. So in the kind of classic example is that you've got maybe like a slit, you know, two slits set up, and your particle can go either through one slit or the other. In the many worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics, there are two universes created every time something like this happens. And one universe, it goes through the left slit, and the other universe goes through the right slit. And you can imagine that there's going to be a lot of universes every time a particle does anything remotely of consequence. A new universe is created.
So this is like essentially a much bigger scale version of the whole Trousers of Time thing, with it almost a sliding doors example where you have one small thing changes and it diverges.
Yeah.
Whereas this is like you're talking on almost an infinitesimal level.
Yes.
Where it's like the atoms, not just, yeah, it's not just like Gwyneth Paltrow not getting into a door in time. You're talking like everything about that.
Yeah. So that when they say infinite, they really mean infinite. Like there's loads of possibilities. You know, each individual particle is creating universes all the time, and they're budding off, but they're all separate from each other.
So here's an interesting question, and I don't know if this is a syntax or I don't know the actual word for it. It's not syntax, but never mind. Okay, here we go. Parallel universes, mm-hmm. and alternate timelines.
Yeah.
Would that then mean that they're essentially the same thing, just on a different scale, where a parallel universe is something as simple as one atom, whereas on an alternate timeline, one major event has changed it? Do you think that would make sense in that definition?
So I guess we talked about this in the time travel episode, right? This
It's more just sort of like trying to work out the definition between what, because it's
pretty ropey, right? I mean, I think
there's
the colloquial definition of a parallel universe, which is basically a whole universe separate from ours. And yeah, if you take that time travel idea where you go back in time and change something, that universe is now split from the parent universe that you came from. Yeah, that is technically a parallel universe. Right, because you can't get back to your previous universe. So, yeah, alternate timelines technically count as a parallel universe. But then time travel into the past is basically impossible, as we talked about in episode...
Exactly.
Two. So, I mean, that's maybe a moot point. And, you know, that's...
Yeah. I'm pretty certain I've read somewhere that there is actually an actual definition, but I'm just like, given your explanation of what... how parallel universes exist, like it seems like it's just it comes from a more intricate change, whereas an alternate timeline, it might be a case of like, whereas parallel universes essentially exist because of a natural progression of alternations, mm-hmm. where atoms and all sorts of little things are changing all the time to create the infinitesimal things. An alternate timeline almost seems to come from one major event changes, so World War II goes a different way, so and so is killed or isn't assassinated or whatever, and that's where those in fiction, from that sort of term, like you all these alternate universes stories, mm-hmm. like AU stories where people have gone off and written stories about different timelines, it's mostly focused around one event changing, whereas parallel universes are created sort of on a natural basis. Does that make sense? I don't know if I'm rambling or anything.
No, I think you're kind of right. I mean, in the general sense of the definition of a parallel universe, that all counts, right? That the same principle applies, that you've got a universe that's essentially identical to something else, but there are certain fundamental changes.
No shrimp exist.
Yeah, and, you know, in one definition, it might be that this electron decided to do one thing instead of the other. In the other universe, it's, you know, this whole collection of atoms, i.e. a person, decides to do something instead of the other. So, yeah, I mean, by any sort of sensible definition, that is a parallel universe. An alternate universe and a parallel universe are basically two words for the same thing.
Where donuts don't exist, but it rains donuts.
Has there been any, cause you kind of touched on it, but has there been any sort of solid work done into identifying parallel universes or alternate sort of dimensions, things like that?
So there's lots of thinking in theory about why we might expect there to be extra dimensions. So it's important to get the distinction right between an extra dimension and alternate universe. So in our normal experience, we see three dimensions, right? We see the three spatial dimensions that we live in. We can go left and right, forward and back, up and down. That's our three dimensions. And if you include time, that's a fourth dimension. So, you know, these four dimensions let us identify where anything happens in the universe. You know, if I want to meet you somewhere, I specify, you know, where the building is, and I specify what floor of the building we're on and what time. And that's enough to give you a definition of an event. In some theories of how the universe works, there may be more dimensions. So you can add dimensions at right angles to those four. You might have to add quite a lot to make your theory work. So this is how string theory and its successors are based. They have to basically propose there's lots of dimensions, and it can either be 11 dimensions or it can be 26. And it gets a bit crazy, right?
Isn't there... there's a joke about that in Big Bang Theory, isn't there? Where this is like, I don't understand how the maths work. You have to create... there's something about the math. The math doesn't work in this... You have to like 17 dimensions for the maths to work. But yes, yes, it's like that in every dimension.
Yeah, it's so, definitely a joke about that's it. That's based on... You know, real calculations from string theory, that's the number of dimensions is 11 or 26, I think, is the two numbers where the math actually works. Basically, you get rid of all the infinities in your calculation. So people have been looking for these extra dimensions, right? And the reason that they think these extra dimensions exist is because gravity is really weak compared to the other forces in nature. And it could just be that the force of gravity leaks into these other dimensions. So gravity is actually quite strong, but we just don't feel it because all the force is being felt, you know, in these extra higher dimensions, and we don't see it. So people have been looking for that. There's been some really interesting studies of the cosmic microwave background. People call it the echo of the Big Bang. It's basically the point that when the universe started to cool, and it cooled enough that the light that was being emitted by the stuff in the universe at that stage was able to escape. So before that, the universe was so dense that the light would just hit things and bounce off and just never really get away. So it would hit another proton, hit another electron, hit another proton, and just would never be able to leave. And at some point, the protons and electrons get far enough away that the light escapes. And that light that escaped for the first time is what we see as the cosmic microwave background. And there have been people looking in that radiation to see if there are signs of other universes. So, for example, if we were hit by a parallel universe, then there would be a signature in the cosmic microwave background. And people have some pretty crazy ideas of how the universe was born, which is basically two universes hitting each other. So they reckon if that theory is true, then there might be signs of it in this radiation. And there's not, right? I mean, they looked and they couldn't find any. So we don't think that that was necessarily proof that there are, you know, parallel dimensions. But quantum mechanics doesn't need that proof for the many worlds interpretation to be correct. It's a different kind of alternate dimensions. So you have the quantum mechanics idea, you have the ideas that come from string theory, and then you also have a really crazy idea, which is that when the universe was first formed, you have this period called inflation. So the universe suddenly gets very big, very, very quickly in a very short space of time. And that during that stage, you basically budded a whole bunch of universes. So they're not parallel. We all exist in the same plane or the same space-time, but we're separated because we're just so far apart from each other that light can never get to it. So we could be sitting, they call it like the bubble universes. So we could be in one bubble, and next door could be another universe, and next door to that could be another universe. But we could never travel fast enough to get there because they're all expanding away from each other.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. It was like, surely it would be a case of they were so far away that the light wouldn't hit it. It's that they're also moving away, so the light's never going to reach it because it's like it's chasing something that's moving.
Yeah, so they're all expanding, and the expansion is happening quickly enough that the light will never escape any of the universes, so we can never see each other. So we all could be living next door to each other, and we'd never know. But
sounds like an apartment block or something.
Yeah, yeah, you kind of imagine it a bit like that, where
never see your neighbors.
You never see your neighbors, and you'll
you never really want to either.
The problem is that all these theories kind of require you not to be able to see something.
Well, that works then.
And science doesn't like that, right? Science likes you to be able to say, well, if my theory is correct, you should be able to see something.
That sounds more like religion.
Some people argue that that's the case, right? That, look, you're arguing based on faith rather than evidence.
To Duncan, science is religion.
Nah, hang on. That's not true, because science is a
worship,
belief.
Worship at the feet of O'Brien and Cox.
Scientific beliefs are based on evidence, and if the evidence shows that belief is wrong, you change your belief. Right? That's what makes it different from religion.
But what you were saying before was that to go with the theory, you have to not have evidence, or you need it to not be seen.
Which is bad, right? I mean, we need to have evidence to prove our theory. That's the way that science has always worked, that you have an observation, and then you create a theory that explains it, or you have a theory and then you go out and test it by looking. If you don't have that connection between theory and observation, then you can't prove that your ideas are real.
What's up, Fair City Podcast? This is Chris and Dan from Fresh Talk. Check us out at freshtalkpodcast.com.
That's right. And if you had any idea how long it took me and Dan to do that bumper, you would actually probably never listen to us.
It's totally true. Get him, Stobie.
Hey, Stobie, it's me, Jarrett. Go to JarrettGoesToTheMovies.com. Check out the podcast. Also, go to Rockstar Dad Show. Check that one out, too. It's freaking great. They're both great. Also, you just got a text and a Facebook message. And I probably better give you this phone back.
Hello, this is Jim.
And my name is Graham Chen Jack.
And we're both responsible for the monstrosity that is A Bloody Mess Podcast.
We can be found at www.facebook.com/messpodcast, twitter.com/mess_podcast, Instagram is A Bloody Mess.
And we're our alternative Wednesdays to the Science of Fiction Podcast, which is a must listen.
So just as a quick aside, because we've mentioned it on a few, or you've mentioned it on a few recordings now, just quickly, if you can, explain string theory.
Okay, so the shortest definition of string theory is that when you look at the smallest scales you can, so you look at the fundamental particles of nature, and you keep looking with better and better detail, the particles aren't like little round balls bouncing about like you'd see in a textbook. What they actually are is they're loops of string. And the strings can vibrate at a certain set of frequencies. And if you see a certain string vibrating at one frequency, that looks like a proton. And if you see a string vibrating at a different frequency, then that's an electron, and so on and so forth. So that everything you see is to do with vibrating strings. The problem is that string theory is regarded by some as the best way to kind of unite the bits of physics that don't work together, like the small-scale stuff from quantum mechanics and the massive, fast stuff from Einstein's theory of relativity. We don't know how to make them work together. People say that string theory is the best way to do that. I'm not an expert, so I can't tell you for sure, but string theory does not provide a lot of testable predictions, right? So it's what scientists would call elegant. Like, it's a very nice theory that doesn't require a lot of elements to kind of make itself self-consistent. It just doesn't tell you what you should expect to see. So the tests that it provides, the small number of tests it provides, when we now go and look at data from the Large Hadron Collider, we don't see confirmation of that. We don't see disproof either. We just don't see anything. Right? We don't know what to think. So string theory is kind of on a limb. We don't know whether it's proven to be true. We don't know whether it's going to be false because the predictions we're seeing are not coming out. So we don't know what to do. the world of fundamental physics is a bit of an interesting point where people are starting to say what used to be considered to be quite heretical things, like maybe the theory should be ugly rather than beautiful. Maybe it shouldn't be elegant. Maybe the fact that we're looking for an elegant theory has led us down the wrong path. So string theory might be having a bit of a problem. I'm not an expert at this point. So, you know, if somebody comes on this podcast and goes, actually, I think you'll find this and that, maybe that's true. But this is my perspective as somebody who is a physicist, but not an expert in that area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks for that. Stu, you got anything?
I mean, I don't really understand string theory, so I can't really put much into that.
No, it's fine. It's just it was more of a, like I say, an aside.
No, I think it's pretty good. I've been trying to sort of ponder through some examples of parallel universes in fiction, and ones which come up sort of fairly regularly. We discussed earlier on sliders is a pretty good example of parallel universes. The entire concept is that they're just constantly jumping from parallel universe to parallel universe, where things are different, slightly different in each one, and so forth. There's also things like Star Trek, which jumps to the mirror universe. If anyone's been watching Discovery on Netflix, it is very good, very, very good fun, and something a little bit different. There's also things like Fringe, which talks about alternate sort of parallel universes, which are sort of similar in that sort of whole things that it just sort of everything develops slightly different. In each of those examples, there is a route to this alternative universe. In Sliders, they have the little doohickey that they carry with them that fires up the portal to get them through. In Star Trek, they obviously use the jump drive in Discovery, certainly, and wormholes in the earlier series before they got to that. And in Fringe, they essentially, one of the main characters, it's really a bit of a spoiler, but if you've not seen it at this point,
how old is the show, man?
It's 10 years since it first came out. And it's been at least 5 since I've watched it. So one of the main characters essentially breaks a hole in reality to get to this alternate universe. He initially opens up a little window and then discovers that if he basically pumps enough energy in at a certain point, he can break through to this alternate universe. Again, going back into this sort of theoretical idea that if there are parallel universes, what would the science be like to try and break into those? Like, I mean, I'm assuming you would need a huge amount of energy to be able to get into this parallel universe. Say, for example, we discovered that there was one there. Like, if that was true, I mean, how would that work?
That's pretty much what I was just about to ask, because the inspiration for the topic was the portal gun in Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
So in the same vein, I was going to ask what would need to be done to create these, like you're saying, portals.
So if you look at any attempts to do this with hard science, the two things that may allow us to jump between universes are wormholes and black holes, right? So there are some ideas that if you can somehow survive passing into a black hole and going past the singularity, that connects you to another universe and you can come out the other side. And the same is kind of true for a wormhole, that, you know, if you bend space-time enough and you make a rip, then maybe that rip will then reconnect at the other side and you can just go straight through. So the portal gun is basically building a wormhole. It's portable and you can close it whenever you like. So, and we talked a bit about this, I think, in the space travel episode, that you need huge amounts of energy. You need this thing called exotic matter, which is like matter with negative energy, which doesn't really exist. So what do you do? But if you just assume this thing exists, then you can build these things and potentially make them stable enough so you can go through. So a wormhole could connect you to two different points in your own universe, or, you know, depending on how it's built, it may connect you to another universe, if that's the way our universe is, right? But, you know, we don't know how to build a wormhole at all. So this is a problem, right? We don't know how to do it with conventional matter. And that's what we have to work with. So I'm going to tag my favorite piece of parallel universe fiction, which is His Dark Materials. And it's an absolutely wonderful set of stories where the main conceit is that there are lots of parallel universes connected to each other, and that human history has evolved slightly differently in each one, and that they can go between the universes, that they find ways of doing it, you know, either by doing what are basically terrible experiments on people to rip the fabric of space-time, or there's a special weapon which is basically a knife that can actually cut between universes. It can cut between atoms, and you can carve little doorways and go through, and you can seal it back up again. And I think that's my favorite piece of fiction with parallel universes. I just want to get that in there because it's just so great. And if you've not read them before, you should sit and read them.
Well, I mean, if you want to start looking at the interesting uses of parallel universes, you've obviously got to go back to things like Red Dwarf.
Well, they had an episode called Parallel Universe,
there's Parallel Universe, but there's things like Ace Rimmer. Ace Rimmer is a perfect example of that, and I think you get like one of my favorite parts of that series is where you discover that Ace Rimmer is actually a whole bunch of different Rimmers who have all taken up the mantle.
Yeah.
And when the Rimmer dies, he then finds another Rimmer, passes on the thing, and then goes off, becomes this little ring of halos around a planet. And it's like, the parallel universes, certainly in fiction, like, there's so many awesome uses of it.
It's a very powerful plot device. And if you know how to use it, you can really achieve something wonderful with it.
Yeah. And like all alternative universes have evil versions of everyone, which you have goatee beards and
I mean there's some terrible stuff as well, but
oh god, there's some serious schlock.
I
like it in the Marvel comics and even the DC comics. They use it to explore, you know, variations of the same character. So likes of, you get the Ultimate Universe, for example, where they've got all the same characters you're familiar with, but they're different. Mm-hmm. So they might have a similar sort of status, but they don't have superpowers. Or, you know, they're just younger or older or a bit more modern. And Nick Fury's case, kind of, you change race.
You change from being David Hasselhoff to Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah, pretty much. And they have a storyline called Secret Wars, which is quite interesting because it's where all these different universes are brought together. They're kind of contained in this one giant space, and it's just sections of each universe that are almost bubbled together. Would that not, like, if you were to have these different universes joined up together, would that not have some kind of, like, catastrophic impact on each other's sort of scientific build, if that makes sense?
Well, I think, one of the things that people often propose when they talk about multiverses and lots of universes that are connected to each other, sometimes they do it to try and explain why our universe is the way it is. You know, why is it that gravity is particularly this strong or this weak, and why do we have four fundamental forces, and why are the fundamental particles the way they are? And one way to describe it is to say, well, look, you know, there are lots of universes where all the possible choices of physics are played out, and it just happens to be that this set of choices allows for humans. So that's why we're here, right? And that's why we see things the way they are. It's because they're set so that humans can appear. And we just happen to be the lucky ones that live in the universe that allows itself to have life. The trickier thing would then be if you take those universes and make them interact. You know, so if, let's say, for example, a piece of another universe suddenly starts protruding into this room, then the gravity from that universe will suddenly be in my universe as well. So I might find that all my stuff starts to move towards that universe because maybe the gravity pull is stronger. I might see radiation come from that universe. You know, maybe people come through, right? These are all bad things, right, potentially.
Just build a wall, it'll be fine.
Just build a wall. Build the wall and universes will fall.
get into that.
Let's not. Let's really not.
Build some stairs, no one cares.
Let's just make this universe great again. That's
but you can't put that on a hat.
No, it's just a bit too big.
Unless you've got a massive... Never mind.
We've just lost like half our audience. Yeah,
don't go. Come back. Sorry, you were saying.
Stop, please.
Sorry,
don't leave.
Sorry, at least we'll get edited out. What was I going to say? There was something I was going to say and I've actually forgotten about it. Never mind.
So yeah, but it would be kind of... There would be
effects.
Quite notable, yeah.
And there might well be the case that if once the universe has made contact, there might be some huge lot, like, you know, explosion of energy as well. So if someone fires a universe into my universe here, you know, maybe there's a big explosion on lots of radiation that's released. And that's bad news for me if I'm like 5 feet from it. So, yeah, I mean, you know, as we were saying before, there are some people who think the reason that our universe exists is because two other universes collided and that as part of the explosion, our universe was created. Yeah, that's a lovely idea. How do you test it? We have, you know, there are some people who claim that there are ways to observe that. When they go out and look, they see no evidence, right? So, yeah, tricky.
But then I'm always of the kind of theory of, I totally buy into the Big Bang Theory. I believe that. I always just think, how the hell do you evidence that? My tiny brain can't get to that point. I understand, like, you know, the way the planets are moving and they're all moving away from the central point, if I'm correct, that suggests...
Radiation, isn't it?
Yeah.
Radiation.
So, levels. Okay, so there's a couple of reasons we know the Big Bang Theory exists to be a real thing, right? We know that...
Because it's on TV.
Right. So, yeah, there's the thing on TV. There's, the cosmic microwave background is a really good indicator that at early times, the universe was very condensed and hot, right? So if you reverse time back, the universe was small and hot. And if you think, well, what if I keep reversing time back and back and back, it's going to get smaller and smaller and smaller and hotter and hotter and hotter until it's, you know, an infinitesimally small point. Other things that we know that the Big Bang Theory explains the relative proportion of chemical elements in the universe. That makes sense. It also explains the structure of the universe, like the way galaxies are and how they interact with each other. That all makes sense. I can see a cat just having joined the podcast. it's just kind of like...
It's Mew Mew.
It's Mew Mew.
Meow, meow.
Meow, meow. Yes, all hail meow, meow.
Giving me those grumpy fucking look as well.
Where was I? Yeah, so the structure of the universe, the way that galaxies relate to each other, this thing called the cosmic web, that makes sense because of the Big Bang. So this idea that at early times the universe was very small, but quantum physics made small fluctuations in it, and that as the universe expands, those fluctuations become structure. And that's why galaxies are arranged the way they are in the universe. We can go and look at it. So basically there's five or six different ways we can look at the universe, and the Big Bang Theory explains all of them, right? So that's why we believe in the Big Bang.
Like I say, I totally believe in it. I just can't get my tiny brain around it at all.
It's pretty mental to think that everything that ever was condensed in something smaller than an atom, and that the universe has no centre. And that everything is moving apart from everything else. And as far as we're concerned, we could be the center of the universe because we sit here and we look and we see, you know, everything is moving away from us. But I could go to somewhere else in the universe and see the same thing, which is really weird.
That is actually, yeah. So that in theory, then, that Big Bang hasn't just happened once. And that's where we get all these sort of multiple universes from.
Yeah, so this is the idea that the Big Bang might have happened... Well, there might have been lots of Big Bangs to cause different universes. It might well be that we have what's called a cyclic universe, where we have a Big Bang, and then it goes back together. We have another Big Bang, and it goes back together.
Like an accordion.
That theory is kind of less believed because the universe seems to be not just expanding, but the expansion is accelerating. So we're moving away faster than we used to be. And we don't quite know why. We think it's to do with something called dark energy. We don't know what that is. It's just a thing we put in the equations to make everything work, literally. But it's a very simple thing. It's just a constant we can put in the equations and it fixes the problem. What is it? We don't really know. So we can put together a very concise picture of how the universe works that explains pretty much all of it. And the little bits that we don't quite understand, this is the bit where people might say, if there's a parallel universe next door and it, you know, slaps us about a bit, maybe that's how this works. not really borne out by the evidence. But people like to try these things because you should try crazy ideas because sometimes the craziest ideas are true, you know. Quantum mechanics on the face of it is bloody crazy, right? You know, if you don't believe in the many worlds interpretation, you're forced to believe in something called the Copenhagen interpretation, which is that the physical universe only exists when something is observing it. So literally, if everybody in the world shut their eyes and all the people who could make an observation shut their eyes, the universe would stop existing.
So if we all blinked at the same time, we're done for.
It's a lot of people on the earth.
Well, I mean, the universe by all definition does not exist for that period, so it's fine. And you open your eyes and it's back.
But here's the question,
right? And it's uncomfortable.
And this is where literally just where my brain goes. Like, if every person in the world, right, closed their eyes, mm-hmm. and then one person said something.
Yeah.
Like,
does it make a sound?
Yeah.
Well, actually, okay, so maybe I've got it quite right because
you
can still hear and you can smell. Right, okay. So we'd have to kind of...
We'd have to go into isolation tubes.
Yeah, if we went into an isolation tube and we couldn't observe anything, then our universe would shrink and the only thing that would truly exist is what we could tell from the tube. So when you go into like an immersion chamber...
That was the word I was looking for. An isolation tube.
We should isolate this tube.
isolation tube. I'm gonna bank that for an insult.
It's pretty close. It's pretty close to what.
To be fair, it's descriptive enough. I didn't know what the other thing was either. Yeah. So
let the person with the higher IQ get the correct answer. Isolation tube. It's just a gigantic toilet roll with like two doors on each end going to the isolation.
I just love
tube.
The idea that like there's a pod somewhere with an absolute ball heat in it, and that's an isolation tube.
Experience no universe. Hey you, your bar, get out, we're isolating you, your tube.
Anyway, where was I?
I shouldn't be allowed to talk on things.
Yeah, so the problem with quantum mechanics is that the observer and the thing they're observing are somehow connected. And how you decide how this connection works depends on how you interpret it. And so one interpretation is that the observer and the thing they're observing are actually in multiple universes, and that's the many worlds theory. And then the other is that without the observer, the thing you're observing doesn't really exist. You know, which is kind of mind-bending.
Is this moving towards the does a bear shit if a tree falls in the wood and no one's there to see it, does it make a noise?
Kind of. There's a bit of like Zen Taoist sort of back to
it. Oh, which is why it's instantly seen as silly.
Yeah, but if you ask most people what interpretation of quantum mechanics, like most physicists, which interpretation they like, they pick Copenhagen. But when you press them on it, like, you know what, I don't think about it, I do the sums, and it works. Don't ask me to explain why, it just does, okay? Let's just get on with it. So, maybe I'm speaking for too many people here, but that's when I have to use quantum physics for anything. You just kind of hold your notes and do the calculations and then you come back, right?
Dirty math.
And if the numbers don't add up, you just throw in string theory or dark energy to fudge the numbers a bit and get what you need.
Yeah. If in doubt, add fudge factors.
Fudge factors.
Yeah. You can sit and eat those in your isolation tube.
But then you'd be experiencing them, so you wouldn't really be truly isolated.
Well, universe would be entirely made of fudge, and that's not a bad thing.
I'm sure there's a parallel universe out there that's just entirely made out of fudge.
And they're all standing there going, every other universe thinks this is awesome, but this really is not awesome.
Why is everything made of fudge? You can't build buildings out of fudge.
You just never tried, that's your problem.
And you have?
No.
God, this is what we're spending money on. Like scientists sitting in a room going, how can we make a skyscraper out of fudge?
Well, it's safe to say that I'm not spending money
on
that.
No,
so, no. I'm sure somebody
is. Taxpayer dollars going down the drain. Going back to Fringe. There is going into spoilers, if you haven't watched Fringe, go watch Fringe. It's amazing. Pause this
totally
podcast.
No, you spoiled it earlier.
Now, go and spend like 5 series of watching it because it's a great show. Then come back to the podcast. It'll be about a couple of days before you get to this podcast. Now we'll look at the spoiler. There is essentially a side effect of being able to break through into this parallel universe in that it causes fractures in the, to use an inverted air quotes, the fabric of reality. Mm-hmm. Which causes it to spread out. And one of the big plot points is that they follow these traces of all these sort of incidents to a central point, which they discover is where the original break. So similar to breaking a window, where you get all the cracks spreading out, there is a focal point where the original break happens. And I know obviously we've talked about how it probably isn't possible to do it, but if it were possible, and there was a means to essentially break through or enter into another universe, whether it's via a wormhole or whatever, do you think there could be something similar in terms of weakening the barriers? Like if you had a barrier between these two parallel universes that is essentially at the moment seen as unbreakable, because we don't have a way of breaking through it. If we were to break through it, do you think it could potentially cause further issues? Maybe not as dramatic as what happens in the show, but I like to look at that sort of as like breaking all these ideas that come out in sci-fi are really great, but there's always that wonder as like everyone looks at all these things. If it were realistic, what were the downsides of what would happen? Right. Like, what are the downsides of teleportation? What are the downsides of breaking into a parallel reality?
Well, I mean, parallel. Well, this stuff that you talked about, this idea of building connections. If you're building it via a wormhole, then most wormholes that we can write down equations for are unstable, so they just close, and that's that. So space-time is actually pretty robust. To get what's called a traversable wormhole, i.e. a wormhole that you can actually go through the other side, that's harder, and it takes this negative energy matter that we talked about. So I think what's more worrying is that to get the negative energy matter, you might have to do something stupid, right? Which could have problems for something, right? I mean, if you accidentally mix that with regular energy matter, what happens? I have no idea. Right, I've never looked at this.
So like Pop Rocks and Coke?
I mean, could you do something bad? I mean, you know, we talked in the space travel episode about like warping space-time and warping it back, and that can have, you know, that can generate lots of energy and can be bad. So maybe the process of creating a wormhole is bad around it. When the wormhole shuts, does that release energy? I don't know.
It's that sort of like if it's unstable, like obviously you lose control of it.
Mm-hmm.
Would you then say have like wormholes opening and closing randomly? Like if you once you create a wormhole, which we don't know how to do, like you say that they're relatively unstable, so they'll just close again.
Mm-hmm.
But what's to say once it's been opened, it wouldn't then and then close, then just open again and close, or open again to a different sun? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, once you close a wormhole, it's given away its energy to close. So you have to give the energy back to open it. So there are some really whacked out theories of of physics at the small scale that say that these wormholes are opening and closing all the time at very small scales, like very tiny wormholes. Because quantum physics says that there's an uncertainty principle about energy and time, and you can basically take energy for a certain amount of time and then give it back to the universe. But the more energy you take, the less time you can have it for. So maybe for very short fractions of a second, wormholes are opening and closing all the time.
Is that where my socks go?
No, but do you know, this is funny because when I was a PhD student at the observatory in Edinburgh, and I had done a press release and it was about aliens. So obviously there was quite a lot of people interested in the
story. I remember watching that interview.
So I got a phone call to my desk, and I never got phone calls, right? We all had an old landline phone in the office.
You never got a phone call? Oh, you should have told me. I'd have phoned you all the time.
And so I was like, my phone is ringing. Oh, okay. And I picked it up, and it had been forwarded to me from reception. Reception said, oh, someone's asked for you personally. Would you like to take the call? I was like, okay, fine. And this lovely old lady was on the other end of the phone. And she's like, I saw you on the news, and I think you have some expertise that could help me with a problem I have. And I was like, okay. And she said, my husband's shoes keep going missing. And it's always the left shoe. And I wondered, do you think aliens could be stealing my husband's shoes?
Oh, no.
And I was kind of sitting there thinking, what do I do?
How do you get my number?
Well, I mean, like, what do you say to that apart from no?
I would just go, I'm like, just kidding. I'm not really here.
Your shoes are probably just going missing, right? And so I had to say to her, like, look, okay, I'm an astronomer and my expertise is about things that are off the Earth rather than on the Earth. But I would probably pick the simplest explanation, which is that your husband's shoes are just going missing and it's a coincidence that it happens to be the left one every time. You know, I wouldn't
possibly
say that,
possibly his left shoe is slightly smaller than his right shoe, so it constantly falls off.
I mean, my personal theory is that her husband liked to play games. Just hit his left shoe because, you know, he was an absolute whiz and that was his
or
idea.
Just an arsehole.
He was just an isolation tube, I don't know. Or maybe he stopped looking at that left shoe and it just disappeared and stopped existing.
Everyone looked away.
Everyone just looked away and just disappeared and never came back. But yeah, so my life is full of strange moments like that. It was just when you talked about socks disappearing in a wormhole, it's like, oh yeah, there was that time that lady thought her husband's shoes were being kidnapped by aliens. Yeah.
Everyone knows aliens love underpants.
Yeah, see, that's it. She hadn't seen that. So, you know, and it's a fair comment. So.
I don't know. I've got nothing else to say.
Yeah, I was going to say, you want to call it then?
I think that's about a pretty good place to call it, I think.
I would say so. I mean, what else can you come back with?
I got nothing.
Yeah. Okay, right, well. So where can we find you guys online, Stobes? Where can we find you?
So you can get me at dstobie, and you can also get me at fcpodnet. Find me on the Twitter. That's probably the best place to get me. All social media for fcpodnet as well.
And Stu, how about you?
I am, as ever, at Barg the Ogre, where I will be sitting doing very little, but I will happily answer any questions or retweet anything from the FCPN and listening to other podcasts that are coming out. What about you, Duncan? Where can we find you on the internet?
Well, I'm glad you asked me that, Stu. You can find me on Twitter at DH4GAN. That's the number 4, DH4GAN. And if you want to get in touch with us, if you've got some feedback, if there's something we haven't covered in the show that you'd like to try and do, then you can email us at thescienceoffictionpodcast@gmail.com. Stu needs to hang up from this call because he's done.
I'm so sorry. I'm so tired.
And you can also get us on Twitter at the Sci-Fi Podcast.
We genuinely want to encourage people to get in touch, make suggestions for things you want to talk about. If there's anything you've heard on the podcast that you really find interesting, or you want to add to, or you want to just find out more about, please get in touch. We're always there. And like I said, it's always nice to hear from people. How you guys think we're doing, because obviously we're still early on in this process. Definitely get in touch.
Yeah, and you can also find us at our website as well. That's fcpod.net/thescienceoffiction.
And we're on Podbean and iTunes and all
your favorite podcatching areas. Look for us there. And that's it. I guess we'll see you all next time for whatever we talk about on the next episode of The Science of Fiction. Say goodbye, everyone.
Bye everyone. Addiction, baby, to the science of fiction. I've got an addiction to the science of fiction.